soul. Affirm until you confirm. There is only one God, and God is defined on page 465 in the textbook of Christian Science, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, as follows. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. There are three quotes at the beginning of the textbook, which are as follows. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. John 8. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Shakespeare. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest. Thou, here and everywhere. Mary Baker Eddy. These three introductory quotes tell us the primary theme of the textbook. First of all, we must understand the truth. It says, know the truth. And what are the results? The truth shall make us free. Free from the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. Mary Baker Eddy provides a scientific statement of being on page 468 of the textbook, and it says, there is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter. All is infinite mind, and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. If we look at that second quote from Shakespeare, it says there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Consider substituting words in the scientific statement that were just provided. And if one has an ailment, it does not matter what is the ailment. What is important is how we view the ailment. Is it going to be viewed as a deviation from truth? Or is it going to be viewed as real? Shakespeare made this statement hundreds of years before some of the top scientists in the field of mathematics, physics, chemistry, and so forth, realized that it was true. And many of these top scientists in these and other fields have stated very similar texts, which they discovered as a result of their research in their profession. Einstein said, "Blessed art thou, because everything that is in this book." And thou, he was referring to Mary Baker Eddy, he even capitalized the word T. And in this book, he was referring to Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. Then he said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. Now, the reason he emphasized the fact that it was a woman was that women didn't have the right to vote, could not hold property in their own name, and were really, like in Jesus' time, not even counted when they counted how many people attended an event. For example, two particular times that Jesus was preaching on the hillsides, in one case they said there were 4,000 men plus women and children. And in another case, they said there were 5,000 men plus women and children. For Mary Baker Eddy to have published a book which revealed the truth about things that Einstein had been studying and researching his entire life, it knocked him off his feet. He had a friend, Dr. Underwood, that was working on the Atomic Energy Commission, and everyone but Dr. Underwood passed on as a result of radiation. And when Einstein inquired with his friend, "How did you survive when everyone else was killed?" he said, "I was healed through Christian Science." That really sparked Einstein's interest. He had been interested in Christian Science, but then he really went 100% in researching it and made these very substantial statements about what he discovered. He also said that Christian Science works and heals if it is studied and followed scientifically. On page 146 of Science and Health, Mary Baker Eddy makes this statement. "Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease." And what is disease? Anything that is discordant. Sin, sickness, even death. Anything that is unlike perfection. The statement is telling us that no matter what the problem is, it can be healed by utilizing the system of divine metaphysics, which Mary Baker Eddy presents in all of the facts that are in the textbook of Science and Health. But it is up to us to discover them individually and to prove them ourselves. There are four operators in the system of divine metaphysics, just like there are four operators, coincidentally, four, I believe, in mathematics. Mathematics is add, subtract, multiply, and divide. There's also a system in music. There's a system in many of the sciences. The system, the four operators in the system of divine metaphysics are named the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. And the Word means the facts about God. The Christ means translating whatever we are faced with as a problem and focusing on the truth as revealed as we study what God is. Christianity is proving the truth about what God is and how we translate any problem that comes to us to bring about healing. And science means that we are at a level where we automatically are living in the Christ consciousness, the realm of perfection, so that we have demonstrated above the individual problems. It's like a musician who practices and practices and practices until he is performing perfection. I believe it was Ashkenazi that was asked, how could he perform in such a perfect manner the piano compositions that he would play and perform in public? He said, it's really not me playing. He said, I practiced and practiced and practiced until it was the music playing me. And that's what science is when we've gained that level of perfection. We let the perfection of God shine through us. We get ourselves out of the way, self-will, ego, anything at all, a belief of any kind of matter or materialistic view, and we let the truth of God play us, manifest itself in us, utilizing the qualities that were described in the definition of God: mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and realizing that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite. At the beginning of this recording, it was stated that soul is our identity. And the title to this recording is Affirm Until You Confirm. When we are faced with a problem, we need to affirm what Genesis 1 states. Verse 1 states that in the beginning, God created heaven and earth. Mary Baker Eddy translates that to mean in the only. The only creation there is the creation of God. If you want the fake viewpoint, then read chapter 2, starting with verse 4. It says, there went up a mist. There went up a mist. Can you see clearly if you're looking through a mist? Doesn't matter what kind of telescope or microscope you're looking through, if the lens is dirty, you're not going to see a clear view of the truth of whatever it is you're viewing. We have to make sure the lens is pure. Substance is spiritual. The only substance there is spirit. Spirit is flawless. It is transparent. And therefore it reflects. It reflects perfectly. The Indians called a beautiful lake that had beautiful trees around it, clear sky. They called it the smile of the Great Spirit. That's what real beauty is, perfection. No matter what it is you're looking at, whether it's a beautiful tree or a flower or a mountain, beautiful view of the sun or the moon, stars, the way that an individual that really cares about doing things right, their character and how they act, that's beautiful. They're reflecting the beauty of God. They're reflecting the beauty of good character. A relationship between two or more people, if it's harmonious, that's beauty. That's beauty of God. Mind represents, out of those seven synonymous terms that were noted, mind represents intelligence, creative ability, wisdom, knowing, capacity, capability, facility, functionality. If we put those things together, we're going to have an action. God is all action. If we put those things together, we're going to have performance. And performance is measured, and it's called power, just like horsepower in a car or a vehicle or even an electric motor. They rate it by horsepower. I don't know why they keep the name horse. I don't know what that means exactly. I've never researched it, but it's probably some way of measuring. I don't know whether it's one horse, how much they can pull, or how fast or how far they can pull it, or whether it's a team of horses or whatever it is. But there must be some connection. Mary Baker Eddy says, the only power that we have is what we do and embody. The good that we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. The good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. So power comes from doing good. There's no power from doing evil. It's only from doing good. Mary Baker Eddy quotes a verse, I believe it's from Isaiah. It says, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. And that's abbreviated. She says, don't try to accomplish a miracle by getting everything done at one time, going from an individual that is just beginning to learn about God to try to know everything in one day and prove and demonstrate everything in one day. She quotes that, conveying the message that we take a little step each day. Learn a little bit more today than we did yesterday. Add it to our existing knowledge of Spirit and God. Einstein said, we should strive to gain a little bit more knowledge about the holy each day. Mary Baker Eddy conducted classes in a college of metaphysics from 1881 to 1898. Those who attended the 1898 class were individually invited by her, and upon successful completion of that class, they had earned the degree of CSD, which means Doctorate of Christian Science. In the class period between the 1881 and 1898 class, she disclosed some text that she called the Diapason of Heaven. And she provided those for each of the seven synonymous terms. And the one for soul reads as follows. We must hold soul in consciousness only as a sacred name for God. We have to rise above the belief that soul is an invisible personality residing in a fleshly form with a personal identity. Soul must be recognized as a name for God and a name by which God is to be worshiped. We have to take the interpretation of soul as a personality out of subjective thought and replace it with the true sense. We should declare often, there is only one soul, and that is my infinite, incorporeal, supreme God. Soul is my God, and my God is soul. What is meant by the title to this recording, which is affirm until you confirm. A comical way one might refer to that is fake it till you make it. The mainstream media and one of the largest agencies in our government follow a pattern whereby they repeat the same thing over and over and over. And it's what they want you to believe is truth. But in fact, it is a lie. So that's the opposite of affirm until you confirm. Because what is meant by the title to this recording is you affirm the truth about whatever the ailment seems to be until you can confirm that the healing is complete. And what the mainstream media and that three-letter agency does is they try to trick you into believing that a lie is the truth by repeating it over and over and over. When they do that, one subconsciously believes that it is truth, when in fact it is a lie. So really what fake it until you make it means in reality is that they fake what the truth is until you believe that it's true, when in fact it's false. Mary Baker Eddy refers to human life as being a lie compounded upon lie upon lie upon lie upon lie. When someone would try to trick Jesus, and when I say someone, I mean mortal belief, universal belief that was not true, he would say, "Get behind me, Satan." He would not give it the time of day. He would not argue with error, with the devil, which is just a belief that there is a personality that is trying to talk to one, when in fact it is a lie that is just sitting there waiting for someone to pick it up and accept it as being true. If one would repeat the scientific statement of being every time there would be a conflict, let's suppose an accident, if someone witnessed an accident, instead of saying there is no life, truth, or intelligence in matter, they could substitute it. Say there is no life, truth, and intelligence or substance in an accident. All is the infinite mind. And mind is harmonious because mind is based on principle. Principle is harmonious and in balance. It's self-operating and it's always perfect because it is of the substance of spirit. And spirit is flawless. Spirit is the only substance. One could say the same thing about soul. Soul is seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. It's our senses. But we have to realize that the only substance is spirit. Therefore, the only senses we could have are spiritual. So the seeing that we should be doing is spiritual seeing. We shouldn't be looking at an accident and saying, "Oh, that's too bad. Wow." No. We should immediately reverse what we are presented with as an accident and not pick up the phone, not listen to it. Wentworth Winslow said to imagine yourself in a room with a radio and a telephone. The telephone is ringing its head off, wanting you to pick it up and listen to it and accept it as being true. The radio represents Kingdom of God. It's tuned into station KOG. And all it's doing is announcing all of the truth about God and God's manifestation. As it states in Genesis verse, I believe it's 26. It says something about, let us make man in God's image and likeness. And then it says, and God made man in God's image and likeness. But we have to accept it. We have to accept it. We have to affirm it until we can confirm it, until we can say, yes, yes, man is made in God's image and likeness. I'm an individual manifestation of man. I was made in God's image and likeness. I am God's image and likeness. God is nothing without a manifestation. It's like a painter. A painter is not a painter if he's not doing any painting. A pianist is not a pianist unless he's playing the piano with perfection. Then he's a pianist. No matter what our profession is, if we're not doing it, then we are not that individual. If we let talents go to waste, we're not talented. We're talented when we are doing it. Talent is dynamic, not passive, not static. It's dynamic. It's kinetic. Affirm until we confirm means keep stating the truth as it is stated in the Bible and affirmed in science and health, explained, interpreted in science and health. Science and health is an interpretation, a spiritual interpretation of the Bible. There's another definition of God in the Bible on page 578. It says, God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, spirit, soul, life, truth, love. Over all and all. God is all-seeing. Do we have a vision problem? We should be affirming that God is our vision. And our vision is spiritual. And spirit is flawless. Therefore, we cannot experience dimness of sight. We cannot experience a cataract. One of the finest practitioners, an advanced student of Christian Science, is Frederick L. Rawson. Now there's an example of where he excelled in everything he did. He wrote a book called Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And in it, there are 1,315 applied treatments, which means that they're prayers. There's something that tells you what the ailment is. It's like a dictionary. It's like a medical dictionary that has been translated to spirit. Almost anything you can think of would be listed in there. If you broke your arm, if you have a headache, if you, whatever, it doesn't matter what the problem is. There's 1,315 of them listed. And then it tells you how to treat it. It lists what the problem is in very brief terms. Mary Baker Eddy stresses the point that it never helps to be talking about the details of a problem. If you want to just name it, give the name to identify it in medical terms or material terms, then fine. But then you need to turn thought immediately to the opposite, which is called the counterfact, which is the truth. He gives you 1,315 examples. It's all on the website. He discovered how to treat retroactively, which means the treatment would take effect prior to him even being notified that the individual wanted assistance. He realized that if God is all and omnipresent and omniaction, how could there be time? So he said, I'm gonna try it. And that's what he did. When he had an idea of spiritual inspiration, he would test it. And if it was successful, he would know he was correct. If it wasn't, he would know that he's on the wrong track. Got to go back to the drawing board. So he realized that if he could get clear enough vision about nothing being impossible to God, and that there really is no time, the only time is now, and the only place is here, wherever we are, God is there. So the only place is wherever we are, wherever our thought is. So he proved that you could have a healing effective before you even started working on it. And he said he would try it with his next patient, test it. And believe it or not, the next patient happened to be his sister. And this was back around 1910 or something like that. So talking 120 years ago. I don't know the exact date, but it's around that time. So she sent a letter to him. I don't know whether it was Pony Express or not, but she sent a letter to him. And as soon as he got the letter, he started working on it. He said, I'm going to test this to see if retroactive healing would really work. And sometime later, he and his sister had a conversation, I guess on a phone or something, or maybe in person. And he said, well, how did the experience go? You asked me to do some work for you because of a problem that you expressed in your letter. She said, you know, it's a very interesting thing. As soon as I sent the letter off, I was healed. She said, there's no way you could have even known I was requesting treatment or requesting a prayer, requesting you to assist in a healing. And she said, there's no way you could have known because I just sent the letter. I mean, it's not like today. We have instant messaging and instant email, and we can pick up the phone and call anybody almost anywhere in the world. This was, 115, 110, 120 years ago. And then he explained to his sister what had happened. And so he used that technique with everyone. He did like over 500 healings. In fact, he's the one that he was looking out a window, and again, back in that same era, with another Christian Science student named Spalding. And there was a fellow that was driving a two-wheel wooden cart with an animal, a donkey or a horse or mule or oxen. And he felt uneasy about something in the tailgate or the back of the cart. So he stopped the animal and got off and went back and looked. When he was back there, something alarmed the animal. And the animal raised up and dumped the whole load of rocks on top of the driver. And Mr. Rawson saw this take place, and he said with a great amount of conviction, total conviction, there is nothing but God. With that, the man rocketed out from underneath the rocks like a rocket, unscratched. no effect that there was anything that ever went wrong. No evidence that there was an accident. If Mr. Rosen hadn't been there and had the conviction and been able to state that instantly like that and get immediate results, the man probably would have been killed. Affirm until you can confirm. In other words, affirm the truth about the situation until you have the healing. Shakespeare, nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Well, the thinking that was demonstrated by Mr. Rosen was that God was the only thing that had any power. There was nothing but God, and God, I mean, he didn't even have time to say this, but obviously he already had a clear understanding that God was in control. God. Not an accident was in control. Imagine what life would be like if every time there appeared to be an accident, that everyone that observed the event, instead of responding in a way that was very material in nature, would respond in a spiritual way, such as Mr. Rosen did. Suppose everyone would think there's no life, truth, or intelligence in an accident. God is in control. Nothing else but God is in control. God is perfect. The only substance is spirit. There can be no harm come to God's perfect child or children. Can you imagine what the effect would be if everyone that observed an accident would think about that kind of thing, think in that vein of thought? They would be creating an atmosphere of love and perfection, of principle, everything in balance, no chaos, no discord, no disease. Everyone that was a drinker would be throwing their alcohol away. Everyone that was smoking, they wouldn't even have a desire to pick up a cigarette if people were creating an atmosphere like that. There's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God. And man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. Imagine the impact that would have on the world. No one could ever possibly even think about a war or abusing a child, killing a person, robbing a bank, swearing, trying to tell a little girl that she was a boy, or a boy that he was a girl, and dress him up that way. They wouldn't be defacing the courthouses by taking off the Ten Commandments that were originally chiseled into the wall, the stone or the concrete, marble, whatever it was. They used to be on all the courthouses. There wouldn't be any thought about being corrupt, lying, cheating, stealing. It would disappear. It would not be a fabric of society. It would be totally out of thought, totally out of consciousness. Injuries would disappear. Accidents would disappear. They wouldn't be an event. And if there was one, it would disappear right away. Mary Baker Eddy tells about a little girl who had been raised in Christian Science. Well, she was still a little girl, so anyway, the atmosphere around the home was Christian Science. And she fell down, and apparently hurt her hand or finger or something. And she got up and ran over to her mom. She said, "You know, my finger doesn't hurt a bit." I guess it was her finger that she bent or something when she fell down. She said, "It doesn't hurt a bit." She went off laughing and running and laughing. Wouldn't that be beautiful if the children, if they were involved in an accident, would have that attitude? It's possible. If we affirm the truth until we can confirm the healing is done, it's all over with. Doesn't take time. It only takes thought. There are many little statements that one can remember and memorize and utilize. Pray without ceasing means that we are yielding a self-will or a false belief to the truth. We should be doing it all day long in everything we do. We should automatically be thinking, am I doing this in a perfect way? I'm a son of God. There's no reason I can't be doing this perfectly. We need to know the principle. Bicknell Young was a very advanced student of Christian Science. He said he had people with businesses that would come to him all the time and want him to help them heal the problem in the business. He said, "The biggest problem I found is that people didn't know their business." Mary Baker Eddy said, "The magnitude of the humanity of Jesus enabled his divinity." In other words, he had to perfect in a human way the qualities of God. And as he did that, that's when humanity meets divinity. Everything that he did wasn't an instantaneous healing. One individual that was a blind man, if you've read the story in the Bible, it says that the first effort that Jesus made, the man saw, but he saw trees walking. Jesus practiced for 30 years before he started his active ministry. 30 years he practiced. Practiced healing. Practiced understanding God, learning more about God. Reading the text of the Bible. Understanding it. God is omnipresent. One of the greatest Bible scholars you'll ever find is a man by the name of Robert C. Putnam. He was trained, taught by Bliss Knapp. Bliss Knapp was under the direct tutelage of Mary Baker Eddy since he was probably 8 or 10 years old. His mother had passed on, and so she took him under her wing, and his father, Ira Knapp, was one of the first lecturers of Christian Science. So Mary Baker Eddy had a very close relationship with the Knapp family, and particularly after the mother passed on. And so Bliss Knapp was under Mary Baker Eddy's tutelage his whole life, except for maybe the first 5 or 6, 7 years. So anyone that was taught by Bliss Knapp is getting the best there is, next to Mary Baker Eddy herself. So Mr. Putnam, and he was a chemist. He was a doctorate of chemistry. So he had the best there is, next to Mary Baker Eddy herself, in training and understanding about what God is and what man is and the relationship between God and man. And so he taught Sunday school. This is Dr. Putnam. He taught Sunday school for like 30 years. And while he was teaching, he was accumulating, summarizing, and putting together everything. And by the end of 30 years, he wrote a book. It said 10 Bible lessons. Wow. It's only, I think, a couple hundred pages. And it's like a summary. Each chapter is like a summary. Each lesson is like a summary, and it has a huge number of references. But if you study those 10 Bible lessons, you're going to know all you need to know about the Bible. He did such an excellent job summarizing things, giving you checklists and summaries and diagrams in some cases. Pray without ceasing. It means practicing, affirming what is God. What is the truth about matter? Is matter real? Or is it like they discovered in quantum physics, where they said that matter is nothing but energy that is moving at a high rate of speed that makes it look opaque? There's a great story entitled The Psychologist and the Magician. It's by Rodwick, R-O-D-W-I-C-K. And there's an introduction by a man by the name of Eastman. It's on the website. Just look under the E's for Eastman or R for Rodwick, and you can read the story. And you would be amazed at how the magician tried to trick the psychologist. And psychology is really like understanding the mind, the human mind. So he tried to trick the guy that was an expert on the human mind. Very interesting. I won't tell you anything about it because it'll take away the the punchline. The fellow I mentioned, Frederick Rawson, said that we're living a movie. The movie is already determined by, in a human sense, by our DNA. Well, he didn't call it DNA because this was before DNA was even a term. But he said our life is like a movie. He said we are somewhere on that film right now. And, of course, demonstrating that there is no time, we can visualize being somewhere else on the film. And he proved that if you are doing prayerful work to heal, that you can actually change the chemistry of the body. He was an expert in electricity. And he said that when you pray, you are removing the negative charges in your body. Everything that's negative is like dissolved. The last 100 pages of the textbook of Science and Health is testimonies from 85 different students that were healed just by reading the textbook. Obviously, reading is a very broad term. Reading to one person is totally different than reading to another person. Some people, when they read, they tear it apart. They want to understand exactly what the author is saying. Other ones, they skimmed through it. But these people obviously took a serious approach to their reading. And so there's 100 pages of testimonies by 85 people. And there's like 485 healings that those 85 people had. They might have had like one problem. And so they've tried the medical profession and it didn't work, didn't solve the problem. And they learned about Christian Science from a contact or something. And so they didn't know anything about it, so they dabbled in it. And then as they read more, they got more serious and sincere, and they ended up healing things that they had not even thought about when they started their pursuit. So that's why there's 485 healings from only like 85 people. Or maybe it's 465. Anyway, it's a multiple of what they were trying to accomplish. And these are without any outside help. No experienced practitioner, Christian Science practitioner, or anything else. It's what they were learning as they were reading and studying science and health. Clara Barton was the founder of the American Red Cross. Another one. Made some very wonderful comments about Mary Baker Eddy. She said something to the effect that Mary Baker Eddy was the greatest woman on earth. Some 100 years after she had passed on, she was awarded one of 100 women that made the greatest impact on civilization. People that awarded that to her had no idea, really. You could narrow it down to probably the single woman that made the greatest impact. The beauty about improving your understanding about God is that it's portable. Wherever you are, whatever circumstance you're involved in that is challenging, that is a discord of some kind of a dis-ease, it's there. You don't need to try to call somebody. You don't need to try to go somewhere. It's there. It's omnipresent. And if you study it continuously, if you're really serious about it, about your life, you will, then the right thought will come to you when you need it. It's like the old saying that when the teacher is ready, the student appears. Or when the student is ready, the teacher appears. God is omnipresent. As you study more, you will start understanding that more clearly. Remember, you only have to do a little bit each day. Richard Strain, he's an author on our website. He was having an extremely difficult time. He was at the end of his rope. He went to talk to somebody that was a longtime Christian Scientist. And he said, I don't know what to do. He said, I'm working 18 hours a day, and by the time I get done with everything I need to do for the day, the only thing I've got left is like 6 hours, and I need that to sleep. And his friend said, how much are you studying? Oh, I'm sorry, I said this backwards. He went to his friend and said, told his friend that he was at the end of his rope. He said, I don't know what to do to solve my problems. And the friend said, well, how much studying do you do? He said, I don't have time to study. I spend 18 hours a day on all these other things, and I've only got time left to sleep. She said, well, you're not going to make the progress that you want to make unless you study. In fact, you ought to be studying 5 hours a day. So think, we got 24 hours. 5 hours is just a hair over 20% of the time. The Bible says we should tithe 10%. What does that mean? Well, think of it broadly. 10% of the money that you earn, 10% of the time that you have. That's the normal. If you've got big problems, you better do more than 10%. You better give more than 10% in tithing. You better give more than 10% of your time. She recommended 20. 5 hours. He said, I don't know how I can do it. She said, well, it's up to you. Whether you want to progress or not. Whether you want to dig yourself out of the hole. So he contemplated on it for a while. And he finally decided. He said, okay, I'm going to do it. Okay, I'm going to do it. He made the decision to build a conviction to go forward. They talked at the end of the week, and he said, my life is already turning around. He said, I found I have more than 1 hour a day to sleep now. This is within the week. This is within, say, 7 days. He said, I have more time than 1 hour to sleep, and things have taken a big turn in all my other affairs. I can get more things done in less time, and I'm sticking to my 5 hours a day of studying. And it wasn't too long until he was invited to speak before groups of people about his understanding. He made the commitment. 24 hours. He said, okay, I'll take 20% of it. I don't know what he did in the way of giving, but there have been a number of successful people that have indicated that you have to be giving if you want to make progress in your life. There was a movie that came out that said, Pay It Forward. Don't worry about who you're giving it to. Give it to wherever there's a need. Wherever you see there's a need, or wherever you think that you're getting some benefit from, pay back. Pay it back. Or if you're not getting any benefit, pay it forward. Know that it's the right thing to do to be giving. Love is giving. Mary Baker Eddy defines love as life. I like to think of love as a lubricant. You have mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. I mentioned what mind was, and spirit. Soul, I mentioned about being identity, utilizing your senses to identify everything, seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. And that gives yourself an identity. You're identifying yourself. What are you seeing? Are you looking and dwelling on accidents, for example, or a sickness or a disease or whatever? Are you going to dwell on the truth about what Genesis 1 says about you? Or are you going to dwell on Genesis chapter 2 where it says there went up a mist and it talks about all the problems? It's an individual decision. You create your own atmosphere. Shakespeare told us in a few words, nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. What is going to be your view? Two people can look at the same person or the same event or anything and have two different opinions. Everyone is going to have some kind of a different, unique opinion about whatever is the topic. No two people are going to agree, going to have exactly the same unique thought. We're all individuals. We are all at different levels on understanding what truth is. We need to pray without ceasing. Everything we think, say, and do. Jesus said that thinking about something is the same as doing it. They condemned Mary Magdalene because she was a woman of ill repute. Well, did she have any customers? Are they innocent? It's easy to condemn someone, but have you ever thought about being unfaithful? Have you ever thought about it? Jesus says that's the same as doing it. A woman of ill repute is in the same category as the customers. They condemn the woman, but how about the man? Think, say, and do. Everything we think, say, and do must be better than what it was the last time that we thought about the subject. Jesus was asked by a Pharisee who was considered to be an expert in the law, what is the greatest commandment of all? And Jesus answered by saying, this is from Matthew 22, love the Lord thy God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and most important commandment. The second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets depend on these two commandments. So he didn't say there was only one. He automatically said the second one. Love your neighbor. Pay it forward. Don't wait till your neighbor does something for you. Everyone likes to give when they receive. You got to be giving first. Don't even think about receiving. If you're thinking about receiving, you're not giving. You're like paying a tuition to get something. Solomon asked God for one thing. That was wisdom to judge his people properly and honestly. Solomon was the son of David, the one that slew Goliath. And we don't want to judge someone by something that someone dug up about their past. Look at what King David's past was. Yeah, he slew Goliath. He saved their nation. But he also had a streak of immorality that wasn't very good at all. You can read that for yourself. But he was chosen to do some great things. The president, who's still the president, but he's not the one advertised as the president. He's human. He made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. I don't know of anyone walking on water. I certainly am not. We all need to be on that path of infinite progression to build a more concrete being, an atmosphere of goodness. We just need to keep striving. If we want to understand God better, God is infinite, so there's no end to it. We have to keep striving. Affirm until you can confirm. We want to confirm that the healing is complete for whatever problem we're working on. We also need to realize that what may appear as a problem is not the real problem. It could be something entirely different. Evil acts as a decoy to distract from the real problem, to try to keep the real problem from being solved. Keep that in mind when you jump to a conclusion and say, oh, that's the problem, that's the thing I've got to heal. It could be a decoy. It will very likely be healed as you're working on the real problem. People used to go to Mary Baker Eddy when they had a difficult time and the healing didn't seem to come. And she said, what are you working on? She would immediately recognize that they were working on the wrong thing. What they needed to have healed was healed, but they had to attack it from a different view, from a different angle. There was something else underlying the situation. There's several steps that she said we need to take in order to have a healing, and the first is to analyze. We analyze to find out what the real problem is, not what the decoy is, but the real problem. And then we expose it. And most of it will destroy itself if we just get out of the way and let truth do the work. But we have to expose the error, the evil, the problem, in order to get truth to be active for us before it's active in our experience. It's always there. God is always present. But the activity happens when we recognize what the problem is and expose it. So let it destroy itself. And whatever residual is left over where it didn't destroy it, then we can destroy it. By affirming the truth. Shakespeare, nothing either good or bad but thinking makes it so. Where are our thoughts? What are we doing with the atmosphere? Are we using an effective filter so that what we take into consciousness is good, spiritual, not material and evil? It's always good to seal a treatment, a prayer. I call it a prayer treatment. We're treating our own thought, and the prayer is, the way we do it is by trying to understand more about God, get a better understanding about what God is, what man is, and what is the relationship between God and man. But it's always good after we've done our digging to try to find what the error is and exposing it and going through the system of divine metaphysics, which is basically understanding the seven synonymous terms. I still didn't give you the rest of some terms to think about, but principle is system and structure. So it's mind, spirit, soul, and then the next one is principle. System and structure. Principle, everything is always in balance, no chaos, everything is harmonious. And as I started to say previously, I like to think of love as being a lubricant that makes everything work. So if you think of principle as being a bunch of gears that are meshing together, even though they're engineered perfectly, there's still a noise. Lubricant will get rid of the noise. Love. The qualities of love will get rid of the noise from everything else that are working together. Everything else that's working together, lubricant of love, will make it smooth. And then truth is motive, consciousness. What are we conscious of? Are we on the path? Are we on the short path to God? The short path to God means we're not going to take any dilutions or deflections or diversions. We're not going to let anything interfere with seeing the truth about God. We refuse do not comply. It's like when they wanted you to wear a mask during the fake pandemic. Did you comply? Did you just do it like a sheep? Did you let them stick the needle in your arm? To stick some poison in there? It's been proven now that they were injecting poison. Poison is a part of the vaccines. It's public information now. But in the beginning, the people that knew the truth were very lonely. Very few. Very few. Most people were promoting it and complying with it. And it's all fraud. All fraud. What is the symbol for medicine? A snake. A snake, a coiled snake around a pole. The whole medical industry is going based on using poison to try to cure poison. Now, don't get me wrong, there's some very honorable people in the medical profession. But the pandemic has proven that it's certainly a very small percentage. But everyone has to make their own decision. Don't let me make a decision for you. Don't let something you read in a book say, oh, okay, I'm doing it. Do your research. Be thorough. If you've got a vision problem, don't just throw your glasses away. If you've got a vision problem and you're working on it through Christian Science, there will come a time where you'll forget to wear your glasses because your thought is on something more spiritual, and then you will have been healed. So don't try to force it. It has to come naturally through spiritual evolution, spiritual advancement. If you feel you have to go to the hospital for something or to a doctor, you know, do what your heart tells you to do. Don't let someone else make your decision for you. You will become independent of any outside source, such as a person or a drug or whatever, when you have advanced to the point that you realize that that's not for you. But you've got to do what your conscience tells you to do in the meantime. Don't try to force anything. Just try to learn a little bit each day, more than you knew the previous day. Let it unfold for you. Let it develop in your own thought and consciousness, in your thought, speech, and action. That's what everyone needs to do. Everyone needs to make their own decision and not let anyone else make the decision for them. Unless, of course, you're a child, and then hopefully you're going to have a parent that is conscientious and honest and going to do the right thing. So when you're done with all of the thinking that you were doing about treating your own consciousness, about getting a better idea of who God is and who you are and why anything that appears to be a problem cannot be real, and you keep affirming these kinds of things, then before you turn your thought to something else, do what I call sealing the prayer. And you have to use your own words. In fact, those 1,315 treatments that Mr. Rawson is offering as a suggestion, he says this is only one way to do it. He says everyone has to work it out for themselves. These will just give you some ideas and some facts on things you can utilize to formulate it in your own thought. And I say the same thing about if you want to seal the treatment, it's like the last thing you say that protects the statements that you've made. And you can say something like, all creative ability is from God. All capacity, capability, functionality, facility is from God. And God is infinite. So my capacity and capability and so forth is not limited. God gives me every capacity that I need to do what I need to do, to be glorifying Him. Nothing can interfere with it. The truth that is in the things that I've been thinking about and discovering in my study on this topic Nothing can interfere with it. Nothing can dilute it. Nothing can deflect it. Nothing can stop it. Nothing can reverse it. The truth is always true. And that protects me. That protects this treatment, this prayer. Because God is the only thing that is all in all, meaning all source and all manifestation. God is perfect because God is spirit. Spirit is flawless. And I'm going to live the qualities of spirit, the qualities of truth. That's what life is. Life is living the qualities of God. And love, of course, is nurturing all the qualities, like a mother. Love is like a mother, nurturing all the qualities. And life is like what is often meant as being the male qualities, which is strength and courage. You're going to go forward. You're going to keep affirming and affirming and affirming until you can confirm that it is complete. Every thought should be an affirming thought to reverse anything that is discordant. And we must remember what words were used by Mr. Rawson about the man that was pulling the cart full of rocks. There is nothing but God. Amen.